Good. I'm doing this presentation. I'm standing in for Julia Lynn. She's the first author. She's with the Center for Systems Integration, and she's on a delayed honeymoon in South Africa. So we didn't think we should ask her to not do that for this. So we have no relationships to disclose. Whenever there's assessment data done, any kind of data collection, the people who respond to that information are the most important information. And so we want to thank very much providers in the Colorado mental health and excuse me, substance abuse communities, key informants in the deaf and hard of hearing community throughout Colorado, and of course, we always think most importantly, consumers and family members. And as you'll find out when I talk a little more in this area, it's been particularly challenging. I am too short for this. Okay. And then there are some people who helped us with the analysis and the data collection. Angie Lawson, who's here, Anne-Marie Baer, who's not here, and Amy Gary, who, where is Amy? Oh, there is Amy, back there. So helped us with data collection. As Cliff said at the end of his presentation, the Daylight Project was funded after the action plan was developed. And it's important to understand that the action plan is, the goal of the action plan is to cover mental health and substance abuse treatment services and access to those services for deaf and hard of hearing people throughout all the key systems. So that would be mental health, substance abuse services in criminal justice, child welfare, education, I'm not thinking of all of them right now. And when the state put out RFPs for the strategic use funds, this was an opportunity to focus on mental health and substance abuse services in the public sector, looking at primary providers of substance abuse and mental health services. And so I'll mention later, but just so this is just a piece of this action plan, which is huge and will take years, but it's a huge foot in the door. And so one of the first, these are the seven components of the Daylight Project, remembering again that we're focusing on publicly funded mental health and substance abuse providers. So in Colorado, and I know that this is different in different states, there are community mental health centers, private nonprofit, get a substantial amount of funding from the state and federal government, and also publicly funded substance abuse providers. So we don't have time, but we're available for questions to go through all the seven components and really tell you all about the Daylight Project, which is a very exciting project from what you can see. And we're going to be focusing on that top part, the assessment process. What do, and the chief component of the question or the evaluation question is, what do publicly funded mental health and substance abuse providers need in the way of training, technical assistance, and technology to provide culturally and linguistically appropriate services to deaf and hard of hearing Coloradans? So there are people, as Cliff talked about, all these people in the action on the task force who've been involved for years in this community, and it would be easy just for them to come to the table and say, this is what has to be done. And of course, we have the Mental Health Center of Denver, who's been doing this for years. But that's not the way to operationalize and continue with a strategic planning process. So we wanted, part of the training is to have a broad curriculum that could be used throughout the state. And Angie and Mary, who are both here, are people who heavily involved in leading the effort to develop the training curriculum. So that was really the chief goal. And so what do we need to hear from providers and from the community at large, so we make sure they get what they need, including technology needs. And then the goal was to put this whole package together of training, technology needs, and technical assistance, and select a group of what we call early adopters in Colorado who could take on, so this would be a combination of mental health and substance abuse providers who would say, we like what you're doing, we're willing to commit the time to this, and we are going to accept the training. We're going to make time for our providers to get that training. We're going to learn how to use this technology. And we're yours for a while to test this out. So some of the assessment data, that was toward the end of the process, of the assessment process, was to use the assessment data for that. For those of you who've been involved in this field, and maybe for those of you who haven't, what it might be, what you might think how hard this would be. I've been a program evaluator for many years, let's say. And you know, when I got involved with this project and then had to go back, you can't help but not think about what opportunities there were earlier. How did I practice program evaluation? Was I inclusive? Was I not inclusive? Did I have any idea what I was doing with regard to this population? So there's a context out there that's sitting in the community, and we had to conduct this within this context. And one of the first things we did, because I have a history with state mental health as the evaluation director, not the director of mental health, but so we collect data, and so do the substance abuse people when people come in. So we thought, oh, well, we could just go back and look at the data that come in from the state and see how many people are identified as deaf and hard of hearing. I'm not going to say useless data, but almost useless data, because deaf and hard of hearing people are clumped together. They use terms like deaf or severe hearing impairment. It's not linked to anything that's operational. We don't know what kind of accommodation the person might have needed. And then now that we're in the stage where we're collecting data from consumers and family members, we don't know where all these people are that people are saying that they're serving. It's just not clear. And so we took it as a big picture. So we don't have any good data. We knew from the action plan and all the people who came to sit there that there was very little awareness in the general community. The other thing is, as you can see from the accommodations that are provided here and the proportion of people in terms of presenting, this is a low density population with a high cost. I'm not going to tell you how much interpreters cost. Well, I guess why not? It can be, for APHA today, it's almost $60 an hour to provide interpreter services. And we have two interpreters here for one session. Somebody comes to a meeting and they don't have a staff interpreter, they have to pay for that. So maybe that's the best example I can give to how worried people, providers are. How worried providers are about providing these services. And in the consumer and family community, they feel like a very invisible constituency. There's a lot of fear, a lot of mistrust, just like you hear about studies that have been done on people who are developmentally disabled, various ethnic minorities. The stories that are coming out are just horrible. You need to know that deaf individuals have been victimized by horrible studies, just seen as people who would not be empowered. Nobody could speak on their behalf. And these stories travel through the community if something happens. So this is widely known in the deaf community, and there's a lot of fear of people coming in from outside of the community. And the hard of hearing population in some ways is even more invisible because they are based in English, and depending on their hearing, how they communicate, they are unlikely to tell people that they're hard of hearing until it's very late. So we're going to have to keep on moving here. But we, as part of the assessment process, we wanted to also increase people's knowledge and awareness. And we wanted to test methods. We didn't come in here thinking that we knew how to do that. And I see Steve Barnett in the back. I met him last year. And the people from Rochester have been so supportive in terms of giving ideas, talking to us. And we wanted to try out some things. And I remember when we were on the phone with Drs. Barnett and Pollard, one of the most important things they said is, find out from your community the best way to communicate, how to get people involved. Listen to them, watch them, and follow that. So that's what we've been trying to do. So the assessment methods, there was an online survey of providers and interviews with key informants and interviews with consumers and family members. So we had a very good response to the survey, representing 22 agencies that could have been potential adopters. And we learned very quickly that there were very low numbers in treatment based on what we knew. So even those numbers that I was talking about before that we thought were large, it was less than 0.1%. And we know that there's not good access to mental health services among the general population. There's all kinds of stigma, and as we all know, and we've been studying for years, so it's much, much worse in these populations. Very limited access to ASL fluent staff, almost no capacity for hearing assisted technology, no awareness of it, and then very little information about the policies, even within the agencies. So an agency director could say that we have a policy about how to handle this, but when you talk to a provider, they have no idea how to, that the policy exists and no idea how to access it. Multiple stories about people trying to get ASL services. Who's going to pay for it? How many people do they have to ask? And you have somebody in a waiting room who's been there for 3 hours. So we heard a lot about that. So we did go ahead and select the staff selected the early adopters, and pretty much the way I described it earlier. But really the essence was the commitment to choice, that as Cliff talked about, recognizing that these are multiple constituents with many different ways of communicating. And this project is not taking any kind of a stand on how one should communicate, but really looking at how does the consumer and the family member want to communicate, and to make that communication available. And then from the key informant interviews, there's so much. A couple of things I'll mention. What came to me when I was, after I was analyzing the data from the key informant interviews, was the word thoughtless just came to me. Thoughtless, literally, in, you know, and it's a funny word. I was trying to think which one was literal, because they're almost both the same. So thoughtless in terms of not even thinking about the population. Almost all the accommodations are done after the process. No preparation, no budgeting for the possibility that they may need to provide accommodations, no purchasing of equipment or anything like that. Somebody walks in the door and it's crisis. It's as needed, on demand, and long waits. And sometimes thoughtless in the other sense of just being rude. So that's the word that came to me. And I've talked with Cliff about this notion of the silent wheel versus the squeaky wheel. These populations, communities are used to not advocating for themselves. Cliff used the word empowerment, just taking it. So sitting in the waiting room for 3 hours and not doing anything about it. So I am going to jump all the way to what worked when we talked to consumers, the ability to provide specialized services, communication access, flexibility in the therapists. And then one of the things I want to leave you with is this notion, imagine yourself having to make a choice. Do I go to the person, do I go to the treatment provider who knows the content, who's considered an expert in his or her field because they have a reputation and they're really good, or do I go to the person who is able to communicate with me or my child or my relative? And you're presented, I'm not going to answer that for you, but you're presented with that every day. And the numbers of providers in these professions where there's overlap is extremely limited, and in some communities, non-existent. So I am going to leave you with that thought. There's more information on your slides, and we'll be available for questions later.